Welcome back to Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. This is Michael Delaware. I am your host. And in today's journey through history, I wanted to talk about the city of Albion, Michigan. And I found some great stories on the interurban. And we're going to talk a little bit about the interurban that once ran through Albion. It continued on to Jackson and also ran all the way out to Marshall and on into Battle Creek. So we're going to talk a little bit about the history of the interurban tracks, the electric railway, basically, that once existed in this region. And I've covered stories on the interurban before on my YouTube channel from a Battle Creek perspective, as well as some stories about the interurban in general on this podcast. So come along and join me, and let's go back in time and ride the interurban in the Albion area. Now, this past weekend, I did a book signing event over in Albion at the Sterling Books and Brew, and I got to meet Frank Pasek the very first time we've met face-to-face. We've talked quite a bit over the past few years on the internet back and forth, and it was a pleasure to spend some time with him. He, of course, came there to buy one of my books, and we chatted history for a couple hours with a few other folks, as well as the owner of the coffee shop and bookstore there. A beautiful coffee shop that has been remodeled in recent years. If you have not been to Sterling Books and Brew, I highly recommend that you stop by there. It's a great place to have a cup of coffee, buy a book, and they have copies of my book there now. And of course, my new book is Victorian Southwest Michigan True Crime. And we'll talk a little bit more about that at the end of this episode. But on to the story of the interurban. While I was meeting with Frank and chatting, he said, oh, you should read some of the stories that are on my website. And he's done a lot of historical research into the history of Albion. So one of the stories that I wanted to talk about today is the history of the interurban. And there's quite a number of stories that Frank has written about it. And I will put a link to his website in the show note description. So if you want to check it out and explore some other history of Albion, you can do that. And he wrote an article in October of 2001, and it was describing that on West Erie Street, there had been some paved bricks removed at one time during that year, and they found the old scar of the interurban tracks that were underneath the bricks in the center of the street, and they had been removed in 1930. And as of 2001, it was exactly 100 years ago that the interurban tracks were laid between Albion and Marshall. It was first known as the Jackson Battle Creek Traction Company, and the electric railway was the latest fad of the times. It provided a convenient way to travel between communities by means of an electric rail car called the interurban. Interurban, by definition, means between cities. That is the definition of what the word interurban means. And these were rail cars that ran between cities, and they provided basically a form of transportation that was quick and easy, and they had numerous stops along the way, which I'll get into a little bit more in a minute. But locally in Albion, it was a set of tracks that ran down the center of East Erie Street, South Superior Street, and West Cass Streets, and it ran northwards across a trestle over the Kalamazoo River and the railroad tracks, and it headed west out of town on Austin Avenue. And in Parma, it headed west, and the tracks left Michigan Avenue there and hugged the Michigan Central tracks to Bath Mills, and then forged its own en route across what is today the main center path of the Albion College Nature Center. And it went across the Farley Drive north of the athletic concrete wall where it joined East Erie Street. Those familiar with the Albion area would know where those points of geography are. Now, after the laying of the rails was completed all the way to Battle Creek, regular service to Battle Creek began in May of 1903, and it had the additional offer of service all the way to Jackson later that year in June. So it would run both ways The local passenger station was first located in the center of downtown Albion, where the recently closed Fedco Dollar Store. Now, remember, this article was written in 2001, so it's probably a different business today. And it was an annex building that was at 221 South Superior Street. Later, the depot was located on East Erie Street, where the old Consumers Power Office building sat. There was also a spur track that ran towards the marketplace where the Interurban Freight Depot was located, and the back portion of the old consumer building was positioned diagonally and used for trucks. And if you walk around that area today, you can still see a bit of a scar in the Erie Street bricks where the spurs were once located. Now, Frank did a little bit of research, and he found some old Interurban tickets from 1921. And on the tickets, it showed the different stops between the city of Battle Creek and Marshall and Albion. But there were little side stops that were indicated as whether they were local stops or limited stops. And these were very similar to what you might call a bus stop today. And they were named and located along the route based on whosoever farmhouse was in proximity to the stopping point. And it's really interesting. If you explore old videos online of the Interurban, you'll see a lot of film from Canada and things like that, because these types of rail systems were used in a lot of places in North America. And you'll see stops that are just like out in flat farmland, and they just had a little sign there, very much like a bus stop. Sometimes they have a little lean-to or something, and people would be there, and if the Interurban driver saw somebody was there, they would stop the Interurban car and let them on. If they didn't, then they would continue on. So some of these stops that were listed there, from Bath Mills east of Albion in Concord Township, headed west through Albion all the way to Marshall. The listed stops were in this order. It was Bath Mills, there was Bain, Finley, Murdoch Road, actually Newburgh Road, where the Interurban cut through Gilson Murdoch's property, Mingo Street, Albion, Boyd, after A.T. Boyd, who was a farmer who lived on Austin Avenue, Taylorville. This was an Interurban car barn there where they did repairs, Hurley Road. And then there was B Drive North at Michigan Avenue, Malcolm Lake, which was now part of Star Commonwealth. There was Fifthly Road. There was Mack. There was Emery, which is near the historic Emery Watersburg House. There was Clovew Lake, in reference to Romando Lake's residence. There was Marengo, Verner, Pierce School, Patterson Road, Coleman Road, Ferguson Cemetery Crossing. There was a Marengo Pioneer Cemetery along US 12 in that area. There's a stop called Cooper Layers, which was near 20 Mile Road. There was a stop called Church. There was a farmer on the north side of West 20 Mile Road, apparently by the last name of Church. And then there was Parrot Number 1, which was a historic house just before Rice Creek. Then there was Rice Creek Stop, Duck Lake Road, or now named Partello Road. And then there was the stop in Marshall. The stop in Marshall was not very far from the downtown center that you see today near the circle that where the fountain is. It was just right down the street, and there's a historic marker today in Marshall, Michigan. So if you want to walk around this summertime and look at some of the historic markers in Marshall, you will not have to wander very far from the fountain headed up Michigan Avenue. As if you're headed in the direction of downtown, you will see a marker to the old Interurban station there, and it's got a lot of history on it. So I recommend you check that out if you're in the Marshall area. So that's just a summary of the stops between Albion and Marshall. There were continued stops that would have gone on to Battle Creek as well, and you probably would have gotten a new ticket in Marshall at the Marshall station when you were headed west towards Battle Creek. Now, the Interurban tracks did eventually continue all the way to Kalamazoo at one point, I believe, but there also were spurs of the interurban track that went in directions up to Gull Lake from Battle Creek, and there were some electric rail cars that went down to Goguak Lake. So you had these interurbans, which were between cities. They were generally the larger cars, and then you had these electric trolley car rail cars that were used for shorter distances within the city, and they were driven by overhead electric wires. So they had a trolley pole above that connected to an electric wire, whereas the interurbans worked on a third rail system when they were between cities, so they drew their power from rail of the track itself out in the rural areas between the cities. So they ran a little differently. The interurban cars were typically larger. There's some old historic photos, for example, of downtown Battle Creek, where you can see side by side two sets of tracks going through downtown, where you had the interurban cars and you had the electric rail cars, which were smaller in size. And it's kind of an interesting comparison of this type of electric rail system. But let's return back to Albion. There is a story also in this article about a derailed interurban car that happened in front of the Commonwealth Power Company generating station on East Erie Street that was taken roughly about 1907. And it was a photograph that Frank includes in the article. The derailing occurred where the spur track met the main line. What caused it could have been anything mechanical related, or it could have been perhaps stopping too short. There were a lot of interurban accidents as these electric rail cars were introduced, and the traveling between these cities, they would go relatively fast. Some of the interurban cars would get up to 90 miles an hour. They were hazards in a lot of ways to the other forms of transportation that were known in the community. People would get their horses and buggies crossing before an interurban. They would think that maybe they could make it, or maybe the horse got spooked and ran across the intersection right into the interurban car. As the automobile became more common after the 1920s, there were a lot of automobile accidents with interurbans at crossings. And there's a lot of articles like that I found in the newspapers all the way from Grand Rapids, all over the state, really. Kalamazoo, Grand Rapids, St. Joseph. There were some just north of Battle Creek, outside of Battle Creek. And Albion, of course, probably had some. Anywhere where there are interurban tracks in the rural areas, there were bound to have an occasional accident with everything from a carriage to a hay wagon. And there are some stories that I've covered in my cemetery videos on my YouTube channel where there were cases where people were hit on the carriage and buggy, or kids in a wagon, and they were either trying to race across the tracks, or maybe the horse got spooked and ran, that sort of thing. So a lot of tragedies along the interurban lines. So it's a very interesting time period in history where you have this more modern, faster electric form of transportation being introduced, and it was becoming a conveniently traveled route. A lot of people would take advantage of this. This was before busing came into being, or with gas-powered engines and that sort of thing. So this was the main form of transportation. And ironically, it was a lot cleaner than the buses that replaced them in terms of the discussion of energy when looking at transportation. And there's another article that Frank published in 2003, and it discusses the interurban office building being 100 years old at that time. And it was located in Albion, just west of 27 Mile Road on Austin/Michigan Avenue. And according to this article that was written in 2003, the building still stood with a metal roof that probably saved it from total deterioration, and it was surrounded by overgrowth at the time. I don't know if the building still remains today. This was 20 years ago that Frank wrote this. But in the spring of 1903, the electric interurban railway officially began operating through town. And as I mentioned before, it was called the Jackson Battle Creek Traction Company. And when it came through town, it was operated by electric wires overhead and also by a live third rail out in the country. Now, the tracks through downtown Albion ran down the center of Erie and Superior Streets, as mentioned before. Now, during the month of April 1903, workers were busy finishing up the brick car barns, where the interurban cars were repaired and maintained and painted over the next 20 years in those buildings. The side tracks ran from the main line to the repair buildings, and there was 20 acres of land that had been purchased in December of 1902 from a farmer by the name of John Hurley, and the overall facility became known as Taylorville, which was named after the superintendent of the operations. His name was Robert Taylor. And the long, slender buildings that still stood as of this 2003 article were the main topics of this discussion that he was going into. So the first interurban rail passenger car through Albion ran on Monday, March 30th, 1903. This first ride was actually powered by a steam engine, as the electric apparatus network had yet to be completed. And the car operated daily between Albion and Marshall for several weeks. And the first electric car that ran through Albion was on Saturday evening, May 16th, 1903. So it was a couple of months after the first cars were run, and they established those first cars with steam engines because they were trying to complete a requirement of a legal contract that they would get these lines running by a specific date. So they set it up with steam engines until the electric lines could be fully built and established, according to Frank's research here. Kind of an interesting lost note of history that he found there. And you probably are wondering, what was the frequency of these cars leaving Albion, heading to Battle Creek? And quite surprisingly, they left about once an hour. So transportation was a big deal. You could actually travel on a regular basis to Battle Creek without a lot of interruption. So you realistically could be living in Albion and working in Battle Creek or vice versa, or just traveling there on business for the day and return home because of the frequency of these interurban rail cars, and do the same all the way to Marshall and so forth. So apparently, according to what Frank was saying, is the local cars stopped at numerous points along the way, whereas the limited cars that you took stopped only at a few points along the way, thus decreasing the travel time. So they had locals and they had limited. So I guess if you were a traveler of the interurban, you selected which one that you wanted to go to, because if you were stopping at one of those smaller stops, you probably would take the local car. And if you were in a hurry and you didn't need to stop at all those little stops, you would take the limited car. So with the introduction of the automobile in the 1920s, passenger service began to steadily go into decline. People taking the interurban were suddenly losing the quantity of people going on these over the next 8 to 10 years, simply because they were getting their own automobiles and they offered them the freedom. And it probably took about 8 years before there were enough really paved roads that were easily traveled by automobiles. And it became a point in history where transportation flipped from group transportation on the interurbans to individual transportation with the automobile. And the passenger service eventually was discontinued in November of 1928. Freight service ended in June of 1929. So you had these two types of main service for the interurban. There was passenger service on a regular route, and then you had freight service. The interurbans often supplied, particularly into smaller communities, stores and things along the way, they would supply goods and services to these smaller stops. So they would carry limited amount of freight, smaller than you might find on a railroad, but they had a bit of freight service that was carried on these interurban lines. One example community that had its dependency on the interurban freight lines for several years was Galesburg as well as Augusta, because there was not a rail line that specifically went to Galesburg at the time. So you had the interurban lines that went through those communities, and they would bring freight service until that eventually changed. There is a railroad line that goes to Augusta today still. So with the discontinuing of the interurban lines, of course, the Taylorville facility out that serviced all of the cars coming from Albion closed at the same time. Now, the interurban trestle that once existed in Albion was kind of interesting, and there's some details that Frank discussed in an article in 2007. He says, according to a report at the time, the trestle was 700 feet long. The longest span was 135 feet, and it had 154 tons of steel that were used in its construction. So it spanned different sections of the river, and the contractor was the American Steel and Bridge Company, and it sent a crew all the way down from Sault Ste. Marie, where the workers had been building bridges over the Sioux Locks. So the interurban service, when it ended in 1929, the trestle was allowed to remain standing even after the rails were removed through town in 1931, and students often used it as a walking shortcut to school. The interurban trestle was eventually torn down in February of 1941 by the Michigan Central Railroad. And railroad crews, more than 30 men were involved in the operation, fastened the cable onto the trestle and pulled it down eastwards. And then they used a locomotive to do the pulling, and the trestle fell onto piles of railroad ties that had been strategically placed so as not to damage the working tracks below. And then the crews used torches to cut the trestle into pieces, and the main line was cleared for use by noon of that day. So it was quite an interesting operation. And Frank had some photos in this article of the old interurban trestle with an interurban car going across it in 1914. And kind of an interesting look back at some lost history of Albion. So interurban cars and trolley cars were an integral part of a lot of communities all the way up until about the 1930s, when a lot of cities abandoned them and had them torn down as the automobile became more prevalent. And particularly in Michigan, we abandoned the use of the interurban and trolley cars, although there are still some trolley cars, I believe, over in Detroit that are used on a limited basis or were used up until recent history. But you only find these kind of things in the larger cities. Today, around the country, if you are traveling and you want to ride a trolley car, you might have to go to a city like San Francisco or New Orleans. I believe there's also one in the Philadelphia area. And there might be some up in the New England area, New York and Boston and so forth. But there's not as many of them around the country in the smaller cities and communities. A lot of people are using other types of transportation like subways and things like that, which are train systems that travel more on a limited scale for passenger travel. But the interurban was something that was an integral part of all across the United States. And the tracks were torn up in communities as the use of the system declined. And essentially, a lot of that was driven by the marketing of Henry Ford and the automobile. And I've also heard stories that he, as the Ford Motor Company, would buy up a lot of the stock in some of these smaller interurban companies and then disband the company, you know, or tear them down in replacement of the automobile. Now, whether that was going on or not, I don't have specific details. I spoke with somebody once about this topic, and that was something that they brought up. I have not fully researched the back history of that, but it would kind of make sense, I guess, if you were an aggressive marketer of a form of transportation, you want to get rid of the other competition, that might be one way they would go about doing it. But either way, the passengers on the interurban went into decline over a period of time. And it's interesting when you look at some of the history of World War I, for example. There are stories of the interurban cars being packed because they extended the tracks out to Camp Custer after they built Camp Custer. And it took a few months before they got the tracks out there. But they were bringing and transporting troops back and forth on the interurban all the way to Jackson. And these cars were often overloaded with men traveling to Camp Custer and back during that time. And there's stories where they were just literally, they had them wedged in there, hanging out the windows and that sort of thing. There was a story that I covered on that time period. So it's kind of an interesting to look at the 1917 and how it was a major form of transportation during those years. And then just less than a decade later, you see a major decline in that form of transportation to the point where the entire system is eventually closed down and abandoned all across Michigan in replacement of roadways and highways and the automobile. And then busing systems replaced public transportation. And even buses are more limited than the interurbans once did. I mean, you could take an interurban car all the way to Albion for the day if you wanted to. Buses, I imagine you can still probably find a bus route that goes that way, but they tend to be more intercity on busing systems today. So it's just kind of an interesting examination of some of the historic past. And I think many times I look at the history of the interurban, I think, wouldn't it be interesting to be able to just walk to one of the main streets from my neighborhood and take an interurban car into downtown Battle Creek, pay a fare, and spend the day down there and then come back home up the interurban. Maybe that also had an impact on the decline of people using downtown cities where you have these big shopping malls and things that were more built around larger interstates and highways. And the development and the changes and shifts of old downtown areas that don't get as much transportation into them as they used to because they were the center hub. For example, in downtown Battle Creek, I mean, the old train station is now a restaurant. You know, it's Clara's on the River. That used to be the main train station into town, and it was for passenger trains, and they would get off. They'd stop, and they'd eat at restaurants in town, and then they'd get back onto the cars and head west on their journey. So it's kind of a interesting to study the history of cities and the way transportation changed and how it impacted the development of cities as transportation shifted. After the 1950s and 60s, when interstates were built, you see more development on the southern part of Battle Creek, for example, as you do see in other areas of southwest Michigan. Kalamazoo, for example, has a lot of development right around the highway, but not so much in the downtown areas as there used to be. Gone are the interurban tracks that used to take people into these different communities and cities, and it was a form of easy transportation. Now, of course, you know, there's the busing systems and so forth. But another interesting note, as I mentioned earlier in the episode here, was that, you know, the cleanliness of the interurban didn't have as much emissions as you might have with a bus going through town. And if you've ever been stuck behind a bus and see them puff out all that black cloud, you got to wonder, if we really were doing the right thing by getting rid of the interurban. But there's probably a lot of complications and mechanical issues with interurbans as well, and safety issues. So there's pros and cons to both forms of transportation. And you can't really stop one of those cars very quickly, nor can you a bus, I suppose. But that being said, it's just kind of an interesting look at the history and the changes in transportation. And the interurban line stories in the Albion area are quite fascinating. The history of the trestle and the train station and where the tracks were laid in Albion and the different stops between Albion and Marshall, I find that interesting. And the history of that quite fascinating. But that's going to conclude today's journey through history, looking back at some of the history of the interurban between Albion and Marshall. If you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to leave a rating or review on whatever app that you are listening on. And if you would like to reach out to me, you can find me at michaeldelaware.com. I will also be speaking at a lot of interesting places coming up here in April about my book. I'll be in Jackson, Michigan on April 6th on a Saturday, and that is a very interesting event you should mark on your calendar if you can make it. I've set up a very special event with multiple authors. There are five of us now coming. Tom Carr, Tobin Book, Judy Gale Krasnow, and Greg Stayskull just agreed to come. So the five of us will be converging on the old carriage factory, which is located next to the old prison there in Jackson. And it's located at 634 North Mechanic Street, this building where we're going to have this venue of this special event. And it's called Art 634. And it's a great looking space. And we will be in the spaces called the back gallery and the main gallery. So we're going to use one of the smaller galleries for the speaking, and then we're all going to hang out in the lounge type area of the main gallery and do book signing. And it's going to be kind of fun. It's kind of an eclectic looking historic building. And Judy Gale Krasnow is going to be there, and she's going to be able to tell us a lot of the history of the old building. So this should be a very fun event that you should mark on your calendar. If you want to find out more information and find the links where you can confirm on Facebook, go to my website, michaeldelaware.com, and check out the calendar. Also have a lot of other dates. I will also be at Big B Coffee this coming Friday. So if you haven't had a chance to meet me and get a copy of the book, I'll be at Big B in the morning out near the Fort Custer area at 30 Hill Brady Road between 8 a.m. and 10 in the morning. And I'll probably be doing a few more coffee shop stops around Southwest Michigan. I've got a few other locations lined up. And I will be back in Albion at some future date, probably a month from now, at Sterling Books and Brew. I still haven't set the date with them. And I'm going to be setting up a coffee and history talk, probably with Frank Pasek and a few other people. We're just going to do some little history talks of Albion and other general history of the region, and book signings and all kinds of stuff going on there. So it should be fun stuff coming up on the calendar, and I'll let you guys know about that when it comes up. But check out some of my other speaking dates. When you get a minute, go to michaeldelaware.com and check out my calendar of events. And before I go, I should let you know that this Sunday's episode on the podcast will be something that you're going to really find fascinating. We're going to learn from a very special guest a lot of the history of the early days of White Pigeon, Michigan. So stay tuned for that. That's coming out Sunday. And that being said, thank you for joining me on today's journey through history. And until next time, when we take another venture on down the road through stories of yesterday in Southwest Michigan, thank you for listening.